Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Some things to think about. We've been talking about the grapefruit conundrum. And people this year have had really good grapefruit. Traditionally, grapefruit aren't harvested, if you'll remember, until February, March, April, and May. So the fruit has to survive on the tree and in Florida and then and in Texas in the grapefruit growing areas, and then is picked later in the year. Grapefruit aren't nearly as hardy. The trees aren't nearly as hardy as satsumas and even oranges. They're less hardy than oranges. But sometimes there are hardy varieties and hardy seedling varieties that have survived here. They're big enough now that they're somewhat resistant to cold. And so they get good production. If you have grapefruit, you can certainly pick it this time of year. Don't feel compelled to pick it all. Let some of it hang on. The question is, what does it do when temperatures get down to 25 degrees? And that's what's happening this week. It'll be interesting to know whether the quality holds up. I don't know whether the quality is going to hold up after these 25-degree days. But remember, the peak is February, March, April. That's when grapefruit are traditionally picked. Maybe the cooler temperatures here, I don't know. Does that cause them to be sweeter and more develop flavor earlier? I don't know. But that's the trick of grapefruit. There's some great old varieties. Duncan, if there was one tree that I think I would grow as a grapefruit, it would be Duncan. It's one of the greats. It was one of the earliest. It was one of the first. Probably still has the best flavor. It's seedy. So it's seedier than some other varieties. So people, but you know, the seedless varieties just don't have that flavor of Duncan, by the way. Some great old varieties out there. Bananas, plant covering bananas. You know, I got to talk about that. We're going to talk about that, I promise. But first, I got to get Sharon, who's been holding on. Sharon, I'm listening. What's up? You got some thoughts on grapefruits?
Well, I was amazed at the deliciousness of my grapefruit this year.
Right.
So I thought it was interesting that you opened your show talking about it being a good grapefruit year. Traditionally, my tree hasn't really borne very much. It was a tree that wasn't doing anything in the ground at my relative's house, so we dug it up and put it in a pot. That was 4 years ago, but this year I had 15 grapefruit, and they taste unbelievably good.
Well, that's incredible. So you still have it in a pot, right?
Right. And I didn't know that they were supposed to be picked later. And I picked mine, I guess, in January and maybe some back in December, but they still tasted good.
Yeah. And that's, and so there it is. It's, I like, and it's, they're windows for fruit. So the blood oranges that I have my blood oranges in containers because I love them. And they're almost too big for a container, but they actually have done quite well in a container. They may be on a dwarfing rootstock, but they have done very well. And I just go outside and pick one every day or two.
Now, another thing I wanted to mention, I didn't remember it getting as cold that Christmas Day. That was December 25th, 1983. I looked it up. And where I was in coastal Mississippi, it got down to 18, and the power went off, and we were absolutely cold. And I checked Mobile, and it went down to 14 here.
Right.
Mobile.
I think it was
December 25th, 1983.
Yeah, that was in one of those years. I don't know if it was 82 or 83. It was a day or two before Christmas. It wasn't on Christmas Day itself, but it was on Christmas. It was like 2 days before or Christmas Eve. It may have been 2 days before Christmas.
I think
on the 23rd. But there was the all-time low for Mobile is -1 in the 1890s, if I remember correctly. Can you imagine that? -1 degrees in Mobile.
Well, I knew about that, but that is really an isolated.
Yeah, and then there was, and then there was the one, and then the '80s. We had that. We did have 3 degrees officially in the '80s. The difference may be that the -1 occurred in where Midtown is now, and the 3 degrees occurred out at the airport where it's considerably colder anyway. So, but it's so we did have that one day, and it was the '80s were a company where was a decade of a lot of cold temperatures. It was the last winter when we had a lot of cold temperatures.
Now, did you look that up? Because I never remember in my lifetime a 3 degrees.
Yeah, it's in the records.
Okay, well, I'll try to.
It's in the records, and it's.
What year was that?
You know, it's in the '80s, and I can't remember if it was 82, 83, or 85.
All right.
But one of the people who, in fact, you can get mad at Tony and me both because Tony looked it up too. Tony sent it in. When did Tony say? He said Tony's got it 1/21/1985. Okay, so that was 3 degrees in 1/21/1985, according to Tony.
Okay, thanks. Bye bye.
Yep. And then there was a colder temperature another day too. So it was 1/21/1985, and colder temperature in December, and that was probably that may have been that 5 degree or 8 degree day that Charlie remembers. Grace, I'm listening. What's up?
Okay, how you doing?
Good.
Okay, I have an old satsuma tree that I, everybody loves my satsumas, okay? I mean, they just, all the family members and friends and stuff, and it bears really well. Okay, so one day, I'm thinking, I wanted to know if there's any way I can graft this tree. And would it come true to what I grafted?
Oh, so you've got an old satsuma, and you want to graft onto that satsuma?
No, I want to graft. I want to see if I can graft this tree to, you know, to a stock, so that I can have this satsuma, so I could have this satsuma to grow somewhere else.
I see. Yes, you can indeed graft.
Okay.
It is. Have you ever looked up what grafting involves?
Well, I have to some extent, not lately, but I'm going to look up. I know what it's involved.
Yeah. So first off, let's talk about your rootstock.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you. What about the rootstock?
So what you need to do is you need to find dwarfing rootstock, and it needs to be. The dwarfing rootstock needs to be Flying Dragon, which is that. Let's make it simple.
Wait, what did you say? Flight Dragon.
Flying Dragon.
Wait. Say it again. I'm sorry.
As in a dragon with wings, flying.
Dragon. Oh, Flying Dragon. Okay.
Flying Dragon, and that's the name of the rootstock. If it sounds like an old Chinese rootstock, it is. It's an old plant. It's not even a. It's not an edible citrus at all, but it makes great rootstock. It's Flying Dragon, Fortunella, and it makes beautiful rootstock. It's the best one. It is if you can find that Flying Dragon rootstock. Now, that's the trick. Where are you going to find it? That would be the ideal thing. So it's the rootstock is what's going to be hard to find and hard to do if you can find the Flying Dragon rootstock. There's some other rootstocks that might work, but Rubido and some others, but Flying Dragon is the best for your purposes. And then, of course, you'll want to graft. I am not a big grafter, I will tell you. I've watched it done. I've seen it done. As we like to say in the South, but I am not a great grafter myself. So, I can tell you pretty much how folks do it, and a lot of people put the grafts on in fall, and wax them in, and usually do have more than one rootstock just in case the grafts don't take.
Right.
So, but finding that rootstock now. You know, I'll have to think about where you're going to find the rootstock. That could be a tough one.
Well, what about, I mean, like the nurseries, do they? I mean, where do they get their satsumas? Where? I guess what I'm asking is, would any of the nurseries around here, do they do any grafting? Do they? Or do
yes,
they
in fact, quite stuff? A few of them do. You can't, because you can't move citrus across state lines very easily anymore, or at all.
Right. Okay.
Because of citrus diseases, people are doing their own grafting, and there are several people here who do grafting and sell the trees. And in fact, I've seen their production areas, and they're very interesting. And
I am in Fairhope, so you know, I would probably try to see if there's someone over this way.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know of anybody who's doing that grafting in Fairhope. Maybe they're
or Fairhope area, Galway County.
Yeah, but it's gotten so expensive to own land and do things in Baldwin County that I think a lot of those guys have gone out of business. But
okay,
there are several people, the Sessions I know, and a lot of people I know. I'm trying to think whether they want people to come out to their nursery or not. Let me check on that. If you'll call me back next week, I'll have had a chance to check on that to see whether they're willing to sell rootstock, and they may be. They may be. Let me check on that, and I'll call me back next week.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree. She's as sweet. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. Just like honey, baby.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, we're going to track down the coldest day. You know, one of the interesting things when you look at temperature records for Mobile is sometimes you have to look at the weather records at the airport and the weather records downtown, and they can be a little different. So we're going to figure that out and get you those dates. There's Farmer's Almanac has a couple of different temperatures, but there was a 3 degree, 3 or 5 degree somewhere in there, low in the 80s here in Mobile. We're going to find that date for you when we get a chance. Hey, Pelican, I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning, Bill. I'm just sitting out here on my pile and looking over the property, and I was wondering, I've got a lot of roots that have worked their way above the ground, or the ground's washed away from or whatever, and it's kind of bad when you're mowing the grass and stuff, and most of them are live oak and pine. If I took one of these little small stuff around the things, you know what I'm talking about, it's got two wheels on it, looks kind of like a mower without front wheels, and trim them roots down flush with the ground, would that damage the trees or be hazardous to the trees?
Well, yes, absolutely. No question. 100%. Absolutely. So, yeah, that would be a bad thing. If I were going to grind those roots down, I'd grind the stump down too. In other words, I'd cut the trees down because you're going to create real serious entry points for disease.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that would be a problem. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to even think how to elaborate on that beyond saying, boy, that would be a big problem if you did that.
They weren't there when we first moved here down on the creek 20-something years ago, but they, you know, I guess some, you know, over the years of washing to the rain and everything has exposed them.
Yeah, and that's probably the case. It may have become better drained, which means that it lost its organic matter content. Did you
Yeah, did, well, see, there was, it was growed up when we moved it. We had to clear it all and everything, and we basically cleared it with mowers and stuff like that. We didn't use any heavy equipment or anything, but it just...
So a lot of what happened is that you, when you did that, you increased the rate of erosion and you lost the organic matter that was building up around those plants. They were probably going in organic matter. You see that a lot. You know, one of the classic places to see that is at Spring Hill College. If you ever driven by Spring Hill College, and there are probably a lot of places like this in Baldwin County too, where you drive by the golf course, and these trees have all these roots, and the roots are waist high above the ground. They emerge from the trees waist high above the ground, and you think, what in the world is going on? And then you realize, oh, boy, when they drained it and when they lost the organic accumulation that was occurring there, the ground level dropped. And that's probably what's happening is for you is that the ground level is literally dropping, both as a result of direct erosion, but also from loss of organic matter around the trees. So,
I just have to tolerate them.
It would really do a number on the trees.
All right. Well, you have a good morning.
All right, Pelican. You too.
Yeah. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. Hey, Taxman, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill.
Yes, sir.
The lady that called in Fairhope about grafting her Satsuma.
Yeah.
I would suggest her to do this. I would buy, like an old time, an existing Satsuma. Don't waste your time running around the country looking for understock. That Satsuma's already been grafted. Just buy you one and cut it down. And graft what you want on it. And grafting is the easiest thing in the world to do. I do camellias and a lot of persimmons, but it's so easy. But that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. You're not going to save money grafting unless you do it. You know, the reasons to graft is that you've got an unusual variety that you want to cultivate. If nobody else has that variety and you
That's
can't buy it.
Right. That's right. You want it, so that's what I do. I buy me a nice existing Satsuma, good healthy one, and then just cut it and cleft graft and make four slices in it. Fix that side and stick four signs in there, and I guarantee you, she'll get one of them to take.
Yep.
Nothing to it. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Caxman. Good to hear from you. But some people may just want the challenge of grafting, and that may be it. So I'm going to check on whether we can get rootstock for grafting. It's not a good way to save money. It's a fun thing to do if you're into that kind of thing. Taxman really likes grafting. I know that because he grafts lots of camellias and other things. Catherine, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
We have a stalk of bananas that we've got to do something with, and I know you've said before what to do, and I didn't write it down, and now I need to know what to do this week with these bananas.
So you've got some bananas that have formed on the tree.
Right.
And the fruit. So, yeah, cut it down and bring it inside. It probably is, you know, it's probably been cold enough that the quality is not going to be good, but they're not going to ripen. You don't expect the fruit to turn yellow outside. Some years it does, but it's not necessarily a good thing when it does. Once it begins to lose its deep green and gets a kind of a lighter green color, or once it gets down to around 35 degrees pretty consistently, and it's been 35 degrees, you know, several days here, you just go ahead and cut it and bring it inside and then the warmth of your interior, it will go ahead and mature.
Okay.
So cut it and bring it inside. Let me tell you something about cutting bananas. Wear old clothes. Do you know this story?
No.
The banana juice stains, and I continually ignore this. So I had this nice pair of white pants that I wore out one day to, they weren't great. They were just, you know, good white pants. And I cut a banana stalk to bring inside. It's got black spots all over those pants, and it never comes out.
Oh.
So one thing, the juice, watch the juice when you're cutting, and because it just stains. And then bring it inside and let it sit inside in a warm place, and it may go ahead and ripen up. I don't know if the quality will be that good because it's been sitting out. I usually say cut the bananas – when temperatures start getting below 40 degrees pretty consistently, go ahead and cut your bananas because they're not gonna mature a lot more outside.
Okay.
So generally we cut them in November, December, November 1st of December. But you know, see what happens. See what happens. They may go ahead and ripen inside, and the flavor might be pretty good.
Okay. Well, do they have to be hanging somewhere? Can they just be lying on the floor, like on a sheet or something?
Yeah, just leave them on the floor. Let them sit on the floor because it is. I thought, well, you know, I ought to be really clever and come up with a way to hang my bananas. And
uh-huh.
And consistently every night at about 2 o'clock, boom. So there's just no good way to hang them, and there's not a good reason to hang them. Just leave them on the ground.
Okay. All right, well, that sounds pretty simple, so we'll move ahead on that then.
All right, Catherine, good to hear from you.
Thank you, Bill.
Hey, and you know, I'm going to lose time to do it, but we need to talk about it, how to protect your bananas. Charlie, have I got a break coming up?
Yeah, but you can go ahead and take Michael.
Yeah, Michael, I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, sir. What is the best pear tree to grow in our area?
So not good.
For canning, but for... I like the pears that you can eat like an apple.
That's
that are
right.
Not real soft.
Eat like an apple. Well,
yes, sir.
So let me the best pears is a pear called Warren, and there's another pear that I'm trying to think of the name of right off the top of my head, and it's not coming to me. But Warren, and I'll think of that other pear here in just a minute. Warren is a great pear for our climate, it's not Magnus, but the Warren pear is great. Now, there are sand pears that have a kind of a grainy quality to them.
Right.
I don't like those as much. I don't think they're as good a quality, and they don't have as good a flavor. And then there are hard pears like kefir.
Kefir?
Kefir. K-E-I-F-F-E-R. I think that's the vowels are all in the right place. Kefir, and kefir is one of the hard pears, traditional hard pears of the Gulf Coast. You can't really eat them like an apple. I mean, you got to let them. They really are used for canning, and they're really hard. Or you have to let them ripen. You have to let them go over a long period of time. So,
well, I have a mature pear tree in my backyard that was here when I moved here, and it grows these really big pears. I mean, pears the size of a grapefruit, and they're delicious. Now they are hard. I mean, when you eat them green, and you know you'll hurt your teeth. But I was trying to see if I could find another one and plant it in the event that. I don't know what the lifespan of these things are, but it's been here a good 20 years or more.
Yeah, well, so try a kefir. That's one of the hard pears. It should do fine. I also would try a Warren pear. They're very good. They're great for us. But kefir is kefir's very good.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the information.
All right, Michael. Max, if I got time for Max, or we got to take a break. Max, hold on. We're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Playing Gardening. Love Carol in Bay Minette planted a half gallon Amelia rosacea in a bed by the house and protected it with a garbage can. Let me tell you, Carol, don't worry. That Amelia rose is perfectly hardy. It's a great azalea. It's a tough azalea. It's probably better that it goes ahead and gets exposed to the cold. I hope you didn't protect it too much. It's going to be fine. The azaleas are pretty tough customers here. They're going to be fine. You don't need to protect it. Bulbs, she has some bulbs she wants to transplant. Yeah, I think most of them are okay. Carol, you might need to tell me what kind of bulbs. But I think it's going to be fine to transplant those bulbs as long as they're not green. But if they're green, this is the worst time of year to plant them, to transplant them, because they're green. They've already got their roots out. You want them to be dormant when you do it. And that means for some bulbs, that may be April and May and June may be the best time to do it. If the bulbs are dormant, if the tops aren't green, if they're not showing, if the tops don't show until summer, then it's a good time to move them. It's still okay to move those. So you're going to have to tell me what kind of bulbs, Carol, and it's got nothing to do with the temperature. It's got to do with the fact that those bulbs already have roots forming. You want to move bulbs while they're dormant, Max, I'm listening. What's up?
I have a couple questions. I have a turf grass degree, so one of them is about turf grass. So I live in Magnolia Springs, and I have very filtered sunlight, some live oaks, a couple magnolias, and some water oaks and different types of oaks. And right now I have centipede in the front yard and nothing in the backyard. And we're thinking about doing a little patio in the backyard. And I know there's some zoysias out there that may be more tolerant to shade than centipede, and I just wanted your opinion. I'm not from down here, and that's the number one question.
Okay, so here's the simple answer, and one that's always good to remember. There is no perfect grass.
There is no that. And grass and trees don't go together. I get
and
that
grass
too.
And trees, grass and trees,
been in it for a long time.
So. That's right. They do not go together. And so there's going to be no perfect grass. They're all going to be a challenge. I think centipede is the hardest of all the grasses because it is a weak grower, and because it's very susceptible to nematodes and other diseases. And a lot of people have it, and then they, you know, and it gaps up, and I don't know what to tell them, and it gets weeds in it. I do think that zoysia and St. Augustine are better choices, but particularly some of the zoysias that you can grow to taller heights, not the old zoysias that don't grow very high, but the coarser blade ones, the ones that have broader blades that you can grow to a taller height, they're better.
Okay.
Both of those.
St. Augustine, is there any St. Augustine that doesn't grow fast now?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll stick with Zoysia. Okay.
Yeah. Here's the good thing about the St. Augustine. Here's the way to think about it. You're going to have to cut the zoysia about as much as you cut the St. Augustine.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So there's not – and here's the problem. So let's imagine you have a grass that doesn't grow very fast. You know what's going to continue to grow fast?
What's that?
Weeds.
The weeds? Yeah.
So if you don't mow your grass very often, the weeds are going to take it over.
Right. Right.
The one solution to not mowing your grass is to not plant grass.
I get it.
Or get a horse.
I get it. Or be prepared to replant every 3 years.
Yeah. Right. So, and even that doesn't really work because the weeds are still, I would say don't look down on St. Augustine because you think you have to mow it more often. It's not going to be appreciably more than you have to mow the zoysia.
Okay.
All
right. So moving along, unless you have something else about that, tell me.
Yeah. So the zoysia, you know, I the zoysia, the one advantage of the zoysia that is for sure is that it stands higher traffic than St. Augustine.
Okay.
It has its own disease problems. It has its own issues, but it is better at withstanding high traffic than St. Augustine. So if you've got a dog, or if you've got people who walk like dogs in the same path every day,
right?
It's good to have the zoysia is a little better because it stands up to foot traffic better. The St. Augustine, on the other hand, repairs itself more quickly. So if it's just a brief episode but there it is, and that to me is the big difference between the zoysia and the St. Augustine.
Okay. Awesome.
Yep. And make sure you get the wide-bladed zoysias. There's several varieties out there now, and I don't know which one's going to be on the they're going to have, but it's the wide-bladed, taller-growing, 2-inch to 2.5, 3-inch tall zoysia that you want.
Okay. No problem.
All right, Chris.
The other question is, my wife, I thought that gardenias were shade-tolerant. And so I bought some dwarf gardenias, and I stuck them on the north side of my house. And the first year they bloomed, and the porch smelled awesome. The second year, I have some spindly plants.
Right. So two problems. One, first off, dwarf gardenias are they are miserable no matter where you plant them. They are difficult. They are hard. They don't do well in our climate. They get spindly. They get diseases. Secondly, shade tolerant means they tolerate some shade, but that doesn't mean on the north side of your house where you might get no sun at all for months.
I get it.
So you need some direct sun. Morning sun is ideal for gardenias. They seem to really like that. And the sun before 11 o'clock, and there's a lot of sun that plants can get before 11 o'clock, and the sunlight after 3 o'clock, really important for plants like gardenias. The sunlight between 11 and 3 can be a little bit toasty and hot sometimes.
Okay.
So there's the way to think about it. Don't do the dwarf gardenias again. You're going to be disappointed with them no matter where you plant them. Use a real gardenia that's going to get up to be waist, chest high.
Yeah,
and they're going to bloom like crazy.
What do you think I should put in the place of those when I move them that won't get too tall but will flower?
Well, if they're not getting enough sun, it's going to be tough. One of the things you can think about in places where plants don't get enough sun to flower well are plants with colorful leaves like coleus. You can plant some evergreens, plant a row of evergreens, and then in front of them plant some beautiful coleus. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I have some dwarf azaleas that seem to be blooming fine there. In front of them, in front of the gardenia.
Right. So they may be getting enough sun. Dwarf azaleas, some of the dwarf azaleas, particularly the Satsuki azaleas, can do very well here. And that could be a great place for them. And if they're getting enough sunlight, and they're going to need 4 hours of direct sun.
Okay.
If they're getting some sunlight, they'll do great. The dwarf azaleas, if they're already doing well, they do great. As I said, the dwarf gardenias, regardless of sunlight, do poorly. And maybe you get enough sunlight there, and the dwarf gardenias just are bad anyway. But you do need some direct sunlight. But the dwarf azalea is a great choice.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for the call.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Charlie, where am I? Am I gonna... Chris, I'm listening. What's up?
I was wondering if you could tell me if I'm wasting my time or not growing seedlings from my citrus tree. I have planted probably at least 20 different varieties, lemons, satsuma. And I've got trees that are 7 years old, and none of them are bearing fruit.
Right. Well, so there it is. There's the core problem. There are some other issues, but this is the core problem. 15 years. will be the average age, I would say, at which they emerge from juvenility and really begin to produce. So, yeah. So you're looking at it's a matter of patience, and you'll see what happens. You have no idea what's going to happen when they do start producing. They could be very different. You could have the next best thing, and I applaud you for doing it. It's just it takes a lot of patience to sit it through, and then about, I would say somewhere between 50% and 75% of what you plant is going to be considerably worse than the mother plant it came from in terms of its usefulness to you.
All right. Well, that leads me to my next question. I've got probably 20 or 30 little trees that are like 2, 2.5, 3 foot tall. The earlier person said was talking about grafting. Can I take my tree that's probably 25 years old and graft it to those existing plants that have already taken root?
You could. It's not a good idea. Rootstocks, and let me make sure I understand this, rootstocks need to be special kinds of trees. So if you used a lemon for a rootstock, it would be a really bad idea because it has very poor root system and is not very cold adapted. So you want to have a rootstock that's very cold adapted. That's
I would go Satsuma to Satsuma rootstock.
Yeah, and that's not a good idea either. Actually, Satsumas aren't grafted onto Satsuma rootstock. They're actually grafted onto the rootstock of another kind of citrus called Flying Dragon or Rubido or Cleopatra. But it doesn't sound like, you know, it doesn't sound like that's going to, you don't really want to graft to those seedlings that you put out.
Okay. I don't think I want to wait 14 years either. I think maybe I'll just get some Satsumas and plant them.
I think that's a great idea. That's an excellent idea. And it's a really great way to do it. Satsumas, if the seeds from Satsumas actually will produce pretty good trees, but it just takes a long time.
I guess I'll just let the big ones live and I'll just get rid of the little ones.
That's right. That's right.
I'd appreciate it.
All right, good, good. Hey, does anybody know why the seeds from Satsumas produce such good trees consistently from seed? We'll talk about that when we come back. Ooh, some good music.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Go through the window, by the window. Be come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Carol. Listen, Carol is asking about bulbs to transplant. So amaryllis, yeah, I would go ahead and do that. Butterfly ginger, you can do it. Glads, you can transplant them now. Iris, it's a good time to transplant, probably for most varieties. The lilies, all good. Daffodils and paper whites. Daffodils and paper whites, you know, they're probably already rooted out. And so that's not a good time to move them because you're really going to stress them. It could be 2 or 3 years before they rebloom. You can certainly do it now, but don't expect them to rebloom. Amaryllis should be fine. I would wait on the amaryllis just in case. You could wait until after this cold spell. But I think it'll be fine to move the amaryllis now and the gingers. And most of the others, but not the daffodils and the paper whites because they put up green leaves this time of year. Amaryllis, those leaves will be killed back by the cold anyway, and so it's a good time to transplant them. Okay, so Dennis, I'm listening. What's up?
Got a number of green giant arborvita plants or shrubs to put in, and looking at the weather, theoretically dropping to 27 in Fair Hope, and was wondering if I had a problem getting those into the ground tomorrow, or should I wait until after this cold snap?
No. Those green giant arborvitaes are going to love the cold weather. It will be the only time they really enjoy Fairhope, really. The problem for them is going to be the summer temperatures. So, no, almost everything can be transplanted. They're not going to really like the summer temperatures here and the humidity. So, just as a word of warning, but, boy, they're going to think, oh, man, I love Fairhope. They're going to love Fairhope for the next 2 weeks. And then they're going to say, where in the world am I? So just a word of warning. They'll love the cold, but they're going to hate the heat.
Okay. Well, the ones that I've got, they're doing well, but they've been 5 years or and they're just barely 5 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them in as a screen, and they're not doing as well as we were anticipated they were going to do.
Yeah, so you say they're not doing as well as you anticipated they were going to do.
Right, they didn't fill in as the plants are doing well, but they didn't fill in to be the visual break that we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I didn't sound like I would choose another type of plant. How big a screen do you need?
It's just a visual on the neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. So if it gets 6 feet tall, 7 feet tall, how tall do you want it to be?
That 6 feet tall and bushy would do the job. So that's what we're. But it's after 5 years, they're finally hitting 5 feet.
Yeah, yeah. So they're going to be really slow and not great for this. Here's a thing that I might try. Because they'll grow really fast. Put in an azalea. Like a Formosa azalea, boy, they'll make a screen and you'll have these great blooms, and that screen will be there. You know, they'll be up and growing, and you'll have an 8 foot tall plant in 5 years if you treat it right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the information.
All right, Dennis. Yep. Most plants are not going to be bothered by these cold temperatures at all. Most shrubs and trees are not. And I try to stress that. There are a few that are, and I'm talking about them. But I don't want to talk about them too much. I don't want to talk about them too much because it's interesting. Johnny sent me a message saying how changes in temperature can sometimes affect civilizations, and certainly they do. And we've had changes in climate before, maybe not as rapid as this one is becoming, and that will be the trick here. But people, in order to deal with these kinds of changes in climate, you have to think long term. You have to think on your feet, and you have to think, how are things changing, and how am I going to adapt to it? And some civilizations do, and some civilizations don't. And that becomes a problem. And I think we're in that situation now. A big question that I keep asking myself, and I don't want to ask it too loud because I live on the coast and I love the coast and I love these areas, is how is sea level going to affect us? How is sea level rise going to affect us? And how is the acidification of the ocean going to affect us? And those are things that really begin to worry me. The ocean is becoming more acid, clearly. That makes it harder for things to survive there, including things like oysters. Which have some calcium problems. They can't form calcium quite as quickly. Diatoms and other things maybe can do it, but a lot of things like the oysters may have a harder time under a more acid ocean. So we're going to be looking at that. We're going to be thinking about that. And what happens with sea level rise? We know that sea level has risen. It's risen about a foot, which is kind of dramatic over the past century. It's now rising a little faster than a foot a century, at least the trends we've seen here for the past decade or two. It may begin rising a lot faster than a foot a century. And we'll be seeing that. What is that going to mean for us in places like downtown Mobile, or in places where we're already very close to the waterline anyway? How do we respond to that? All these are good questions we got to ask, because we know these things are happening. You know, it's a good one. How's it going to affect our gardens, this changes in climate? I don't know, but we're going to have to be watchful. We're going to have to pay attention. We're going to have to think about things. I may have to concede that, boy, you can grow grapefruit in Mobile. if year after year after year we get good crops. It's a different thing for Mobile. We weren't doing that 30 years ago. But now, you know, maybe we are. Maybe we are going to be able to do it a little better. As long as these cold outbreaks, which are still occurring, don't last too long and don't dig too deep and don't get too cold. Things are changing. Well, give us a call next week, and we'll talk about how your garden survived these cold temperatures. It's been really fun today. Stay tuned next week.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.
A little sunshine is nice, but too much is damaging. ProTint Window Tinting specializes in protecting you, your vehicles, homes, and businesses with premium installations of thermal and UV reduction ceramic films. Along with preventing sun damage, window tinting increases your privacy, provides a cool and comfortable interior, and is visually pleasing. When your factory-installed tint fails, call ProTint. With a no-fault lifetime warranty on all jobs, ProTint has you covered. Call today, 802-1234. That's 802-1234.
Sam Wyche was a quarterback, head coach, and broadcaster in the NFL. Last year, he became a heart recipient.
And now I know what a miracle feels like. My new heart gave me a new mission in life, and that is to get others to sign up to be organ donors. There are over 130 million people that have already signed up. Be a part of that. Please sign up to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov.
U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.